The topic is Moshe's staff that he was instructed to use at various points to affect the 10 plagues, the Esar Makos. What exactly was the function of this staff? Why did he need a magic wand? Lahavdol. Right. Why did Moshe need some kind of rod to be able to bring these makos? And what was its, what was the meaning of it? In order to understand the function of the mate, of the rod, the staff, we first have to understand the function of the makos themselves. What was their purpose? Why did God bring 10 plagues on the Egyptians? So the Medrash Tanhuma says that the plagues were similar to when you make war. A king makes war on a another kingdom, so he comes against them slowly in order to conquer them. He tries slowly to convince them to give in, so he doesn't have to fight. Doesn't have to make war on them. So first he cuts off their water supply. Sees if he can bring them to their feet in that way. And so on. So too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu came against the Egyptians in a very slow manner, trying to get them to give in before he would have to wage all-out war on them. So in from that perspective, the Makos were basically to convince Paro to let the Jewish people go. And according to that, you have to understand that which God hardened Paro's heart, not to be to make it impossible for him to agree, because the whole purpose of the Makos were that he should agree, but that he should agree because he wanted to agree and not because he was forced because of the Makos itself. So God hardened his heart to balance out the strength of the plague with Paro's free choice. So basically, his hardening of the heart was to enable him to have free choice, not to take away his free choice. But ultimately, God wanted Paro to be influenced by the plagues and to come around and agree to let them go on his own. Then there's another aspect to the plagues, and we'll see that these are not contradictory, but they are complementary. The plagues had all of these ideas in them, in some form. The, yeah. Yeah, that if God had not hardened Paro's heart, then he would have been forced by the strength of the plague to give in. But that would not have been his free choice. That would have been forced.
He would have given in.
He would have given in, but not because he wanted to, because he had to, because of the Makkah, because of the plague. So therefore God hardened his heart so he could balance out the plague with his free choice. Now he could still make the decision to give in. But if he did, he wouldn't have made the decision forced by the plague, but because he wanted to do it, because of free choice. So God brought the plague to induce him to give in. But he didn't want to force him to give in, because he wanted him to do it out of his own free will. So he hardened his heart enough that the plague would be an inducement to his free will, but not something that would force him against his free will. Understand?
Yeah, but it seems like a very like convoluted way to get the job done. It's like if I want to like lose weight, so I exercise and don't eat more. So if I eat more, then I have to exercise twice as much, right? So it seems like
that's the question's a good question when there's no reason for all the factors. You could just take away one factor and everything would be the same.
Yeah.
If the only goal was to get the Jews out of Egypt, then God could have just taken them out without 10 plagues. The goal, God could have taken them out without 10 plagues. Yeah. Could have made all the Egyptians die of heart attacks. But God doesn't run the world like that. He runs the world in a way that people are dynamic. And he wants people to do what's right. So he gives all the players free choice. He somehow intervenes, but doesn't interfere. So God wanted the Egyptians. Egyptians were human beings. He wanted them to make the right choices, to repent. He didn't want to force them as robots, because if he did, then he could have a world full of righteous people who are robots. But God created the world where people are dynamic. So he wanted that dynamism of the Egyptians to still remain intact. Okay? Yeah. On the other hand, he also wanted the goal to come. So he facilitated that goal but did not interfere totally with the free choice of the people involved. Yes?
So, actually, it would have been possible for the Egyptians to have just said, hey, we're sorry, bye, and they could have just left without all the plagues and everything?
Possibly, but we'll see the plagues had other purposes. So for those other purposes, the plagues would have had to happen no matter what.
So there's no way the Egyptians could have just said, hey, listen, we were wrong, mm-hmm. and you're free to go.
They could have said that, but we'll see. Let's see the whole thing
first. Wouldn't they deserve to be punished anyway for all the terrible things?
That's the next thing we're going to mention. Another aspect of the plagues, wait till we finish the whole thing, you'll see the whole picture, then it'll make more sense. Another aspect of the plagues was a punishment for all the decrees and terrible misfortune that the Egyptians already brought on the Jewish people. In other words, it wasn't just a question they weren't letting them go. They deserved to be punished, not just for not letting them go, but for what they did till now. They drowned Jewish children. They worked the Jews in terrible, bitter ways. Pharaoh made 10 decrees against the Jews. I didn't see exactly what they were, but there were 10 separate decrees that Chazal mentioned. And therefore, for each decree, he was punished with another plague. And Mida Keneged Mida, the Medrashim go through that Pharaoh was paid in kind for all of the misfortune he brought upon the Jewish people. Says that he made the Jews water carriers. That was one of the things that he used to demean them, to be servants of water carriers, so the water turned to blood. And many more, every detail of every plague somehow punished Pharaoh in kind for what he did to the Jewish people. So this is a second function of the plagues as a punishment for past deeds of the Egyptians. Now, even if they had agreed to let them go, probably the rest of the plagues would have had to have been brought, because they still need to be punished for what they did in the past. So therefore, in that respect, Pharaoh's heart was hardened enough that the plagues could finish. That even if he agreed to let them go, right, he still would not agree before the plagues were finished. So there was a certain aspect of hardening his heart in order that the plagues should be able to be played out on him. In addition, there was a third purpose. And that was for the sake of the Jewish people. The 10 plagues were a learning process for the Jewish people to take them out of the 10 klipos, the 10 shells of tumah, of defilement, up to the 10 levels of holiness before they would leave Egypt. So God educated the Jewish people. We'll see in one second how that worked. Through the 10 plagues. And that's why the 10 plagues correspond to the 10 utterances with which the world was created. Here, God was showing that he was the creator, that he is involved in the world, and that he rewards and punishes. In fact, the Sfarim say that the plagues were brought in 3 groups. Tzach, Dam, Tzvardeya, Kinim, Adash, Arov, Dever, Shchin, and Ba'achav, borod ar bechoshech bechoros. Makas bechoros. So there were 10 plagues, 3, 3, and 4. And each group, according to some, had another purpose of instruction. The first three pointed to the fact that God exists. There is a God. The Nile is not the God. The land of Egypt is not the God. God has power over the Nile and over the land of Egypt. And therefore God, the same God that created the world, that split the waters and made room, dry land for human beings, was doing it again. He took away the water from the Egyptians. He took away their dry land and made it into lice. And made frogs come out of the water. He can create whatever he wants. God is the creator. He can create frogs, create lice if necessary, and he can take away the light living of human beings. That's the first three plagues. Second three plagues, God controls the world. He can bring wild animals from wherever they are and direct them where they should be. He can kill what's it called cattle, devil, and he can inflict wounds on human beings, shchin, the boils. And the last four show that God rewards and punishes. Took away the food supply, borod, brought down hail on the Egyptians, and he brought arbe to eat their food supply, and he brought choshech, darkness, to take away their ability to function, and he killed the firstborn. So the three principles of religion, that God exists, that he is involved in what goes on in the world, guides it, there's divine providence, and that there's reward and punishment, all were represented by the plagues. And basically to teach the Jews this lesson. I have another idea of why the Jews needed these 10 plagues to see them. It has a negative effect on the Egyptians and a positive effect on the Jews. What was the whole purpose of taking us out of Egypt? To make us into God's nation. Am zu yatsar ti li ti losi yisaperu. I made this nation and therefore they sing my praises. Meaning, we represent God. And the way we live represents godliness. And we represent God because we are a nation that was made, formed by God. Our nationhood was completely dependent on God. We weren't a nation until God made us into a nation. We had none of the accoutrements of a nation before God gave them. What are those accoutrements? A nation is distinguished by its unique identity amongst the other nations, its resources, and its purpose, its goal. That's what distinguishes one nation from another. The identity is its character, right? Each nation has a different character, different kinds of people, right, that make up that nation. Then they have the resources that the nation represents, that they have to use in with their character, to use those resources to have the third thing, to contribute their part in the family of nations. What's their purpose? What do they contribute? So those three things, identity, resources, and goals, purposes, are the three things that distinguish a nation from another one.
It depends on the land, which land they're in.
Yeah, that's part of it. No, that's part of it. Part of the resources and the identity is the land.
Because without the land, if they would be moved to another place, it wouldn't be that nation.
Right, but that's not true. Because if they'd been moved to another place, they still wouldn't lose their identity with their character traits or whatever. But they would lose their resources to a certain degree.
People. What? You see, American melting pot, the people aren't
the people. Yeah, but that it didn't work completely. Other, they gave up on that idea because people still maintain their identity, right? The Italians still have folk customs and have a certain personality different than the southern Negroes. They're different. And the melting pot didn't work. It's the, today the philosophy in America is not one big melting pot, but it's to take different ethnic identities and give them the ability to work together within one framework. So the melting pot is not a proof against what I'm saying, just the opposite. It's a proof to what I'm saying. Yes. They've given up on the concept of a melting pot for years and years.
But somehow we've moved all the nations around.
You can't find... Same thing. The nations still maintained a certain amount of their identity. They didn't become Jews.
They didn't become... The Jews maintained their identity. What's it called?
They, to a certain degree, assimilated, but to a certain degree, they still had their ethnic, what's it called, identity. Right? The Negroes in America still have an ethnic identity. They're not the same as the Italians or the Puerto Ricans or whatever.
It's not the same because Negroes are their color is also different. So it also
Puerto Ricans are... So it's Irish.
They can, assimilate enough, they lose some of their color.
Yeah. Oh, but that's not... There's the Irish. There's the all of them. Throughout had maintained a certain identity of what they were. Again, the melting pot is not a proof. It's just the opposite. It's a proof to me because it didn't work. And they've abandoned it. So it was a dream that couldn't be. Right? And even though, basically, they may have religion-wise, melted into one religion, right, or taken on the host religion, but their ethnic character still remained. An Irishman is still an Irishman, different than a Puerto Rican. Okay, in any case, so every nation has its identity. The identity is related to the land that they're given. God gave them a land that fits their identity. He gave them a language that fits their identity. And so on. This is not just haphazard. God ordained all of this too. And he matched up nations with a language, with a special land or whatever. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted the Jewish people that their identity should be totally based on God. God made. Our resources should be given to us totally by God. Our purposes and goals are given totally by God. In everything we are, is based on God. So we are a nation of God. We're God's nation. As opposed to other nations that basically developed to a certain degree themselves. They developed their identity. They developed their resources. They developed their goals. For sure, God's behind the scenes, but only behind the scenes. The Egyptians were the antithesis of what the Jewish people should be. The Egyptians claimed to be a self-made people. They didn't believe in God. They believed they could manipulate nature. Paro said, I am God. I made the Nile and it's mine. They consider themselves totally self-made people who could manipulate even nature. Magic, whatever. Hold on, the question's still here. And that was the antithesis of what the Jewish people were. Had no identity, no resources, and no purpose without God ordaining it, God giving it to them. So that was the purpose of the slavery and the affliction in Egypt. It stripped us of our identity, our resources, by being strangers in a land that wasn't ours. We lost our identity to a certain degree. We lost our resources by being slaves, because whatever a slave has belongs to his master. And we lost our purpose and goal by being afflicted, by giving work that has no purpose. And then, after God stripped us of our identity, our resources, and our goals, He, in a twinkling of an eye, gave it all back to us, but God-given. He gave us an identity again, He gave us resources, He gave us goals. That was Yetzias Mitzrayim. But before He did that, He wanted us to see how bankrupt a nation is when its identity, resources, and goals are self-made, where people think that they're self-made people. So the 10 plagues did that. The plagues, the first three plagues, in my estimation, attacked the identity of the Egyptians. They identified with the Nile and with the land of Egypt. So God said the following. I give people their identity. That's God-given. And that's symbolized by blood. The blood is the foundation of life. And it's God's contribution. You don't have to do anything with it. Under normal circumstances, things don't go wrong. The blood that you're given when you're born reproduces. That's closed system. You don't have to tamper with it. You don't have to add any more blood. You have to keep getting blood transfusions. But God wanted us to be dynamic. He didn't want us to be robots. So he wants us to enhance our life. There's another liquid that we induce that enhances our life. That's water. God said, if you consider yourselves self-made people, then conceptually you are substituting my blood with your water. You're making my blood into water. So let's see what happens when I make your water into my blood. See how you can exist. That was the first plague. If you want to change blood into water, let's see what happens when I change water into blood. Blood into water means you're making your identity self-made as opposed to admitting that God was the one who made you. And then if you have such an identity that you think you're a self-made person and you don't attribute your essence to God, then you're going to end up being perverse and harmful and noisy. So what's going to come out of the Nile is going to be frogs. It's going to be putrid. The fish are going to die. Frogs are going to come out and cause havoc. You're going to be destructive people in this world. And then, instead of the world being created for you, because of how great you are, what's going to happen is that the earth, which is supposed to be a basis for human beings, will turn to lice, and the people will become the base for the lice instead of the earth being the base for them. That's what happens when you corrupt your personality. That's, in my estimation, the meaning of the first three plagues. The next three plagues dealt with the Egyptians' money, possessions. The first one, Aroth, took away their homes, their ability to have control over their home, which is a person's major possession. And then it killed their cattle, which was their holy possessions. And then it affected their bodies, which is a person's most intimate possession. So the second one took away their resources. And the third grouping took away their goals. Barad and Arbe took away their food supply, immediate food supply and long-range food supply. Choshech took away their ability to function. And Makas Pechoris took away their future, took away the next generation. So took away their goals. So when the Jews saw how bankrupt, how negative a nation was that was built on Kochi Votzim Yadi, on self-made people, so then they understood how important it was for them to be the opposite, to have their identity, resources, and goals totally devoted to God. So in that respect also, the 10 plagues were a lesson for the Jewish people. Therefore, we find that the 10 plagues corresponded to the 10 tests of Avraham Avinu. Why the connection? Because the 10 tests of Avraham Avinu gave the Jewish people the inner potential to get close to God. And therefore, even though they were in Egypt, they had the potential, the ability to learn from these plagues and bring out their holiness. So the 10 plagues took them away from the 10 levels of tumah, of defilement, to 10 levels of purity, but they had that power to do it because the Jews had that inner power to be affected. They had those, the effect of Avraham Avinu's tentesh within them. According to that, again, the hardening of Paro's heart was not only to enable him to have free choice, but to delay that free choice until all the 10 plagues would take part, so the Jews could learn from them too. Both that the Egyptians should be punished by them, and the Jews should be able to learn from them. So those are the three functions of the plagues. They served as a means to cajole Paro to give in intellectually, physically, right? They gave him the incentive to want to let them go, to enable him to exercise his free choice. They were a punishment for past misdeeds of the Egyptians, and they were a lesson both to the Egyptians and mostly to the Jews to give them a perspective of who God is. And therefore, they also corresponded to the 10 utterances with which the world was created, because it basically gave God a chance for an encore of creation. He was able to show the world something that no one witnessed before, the creation of the world. This is like a recreation of the world. God functioned as the creator, the divine providence, and the rewarder and punisher, all in one. Now the Malbim points out in a different context. I'm going to make use of what he says, even though he says something completely different, actually. The Malbim points out that a staff can have three purposes to it. There are three kinds of staffs. Three reasons why people carry canes. One is a sign of respect. People carry a cane, it's a sign kivod malachim. A king has a scepter. It's a sign of honor, glory. One purpose. Second purpose is people carry a cane for support. They need the cane to support them. The third is a cane is to hit people with, to punish people. Those are the three functions of a cane: hitting, supporting, glory and honor. Therefore, the mata represented the three functions of the plagues. You needed something to focus people's attention as what's going on here. Why are these plagues coming? So the mata was the vehicle to convey the purpose of the plagues. It wasn't that God needed a magic wand to do them. But when the people saw the matter, they thought of the three things. They said, this matter is a support. Support for the Jewish people to teach them, to get them out of Egypt, right? It was a means of showing that Moshe Rabbeinu was God's shliach. He carried God's scepter. This was matter Elohim. This was God's staff. And Moshe was God's representative. So it gave covet to Moshe Rabbeinu, and in that way, Paro listened to him. It fulfilled that function of the plagues to convince Paro to let them go. It also made Moshe Rabbeinu aware of his mission. That he tried to get out of the mission. But the matter itself represented that you're not going to be successful with words. You don't convince people with words. You're going to convince them with the might of that stick, with the might of the matas. So it gave Moshe Rabbeinu covet, it gave him direction, and it was an azer that was a support for the Jewish people. That's two functions of the matas. In fact, one Medrash says that the matzah, in this respect, to Moshe Rabbeinu, turned into a snake. And then it turned back into a matzah. Why? Because it represented to Moshe that he spoke Lashon Hara against the Jewish people in doubting that they would listen to him. That was one function of the matzah. The matzah, the makos, were to aid the Jewish people in learning these lessons. Moshe doubted that they would learn it. But so God took that matter which represented this and turned it into a snake to tell him, you suspected the Jewish people wrongly. They will believe. They will listen. They will benefit from these 10 plagues. And therefore, there's another medrash that says that the snake represents the Yetzer Hara. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, it's my Yetzer Hara that is pushing me not to accept this mission. God said, you can hold on to the Yetzer Hara and direct it as you want. And you can accept the mission. And not only that, you have to put yourself in danger by picking up a snake to help the Jewish people. So all of this was a support for Moshe, a sign of glory of what his mission was, and a support for the Jewish people. At the same time, it was a makel to hit Paro with. And that's why it turned into a snake, or a tanin, some say a crocodile, in front of Paro. Because Paro was euphemized in a snake. Paro was compared to a snake. And God wanted to show Paro, I can take that snake and turn it into a rod. Paro can be made immobile, made totally, what's it called, neutralized. Just like a snake can turn back into a matter. And just like the snake bites and is dangerous, but God neutralized it and made it back into a matter. And all the other matters were swallowed by this matter, right? Is a symbol that the Jewish people will eventually swallow up all the nations. We will survive. And therefore, it's a sign of what's it called, of that was in the hands of all the Jewish kings, till Mashiach will come. That staff was still existing. And it was passed down from the others. It says that the Adam HaRishon gave it to Noach, and Noach to Avram, and it was passed down till Yisro, and Moshe got it from Yisro. 10 people had that staff since the beginning of the world, because it was created Ben HaShemashes, Friday, twilight time. And it had written on it the names of the Avos and Imahos and the Shvatim, meaning that it showed this concept of what the Jewish people had, potential they had, based on their past. It also weighed or had the volume of 40 saw, the same volume as a mikveh. It wasn't just a stick. It was a big thing. And it had the same volume as a mikveh. Because what's the purpose of a mikveh? To take things that are impure and make them pure. Those are the purpose of the makas too. To take the Jewish people from impurity to purity. And also the matter was made out of sanpiron, very hard, like diamond, what's it called, material. The same exact material that the luchos were made from. Because basically, this matter, which represented the makos, would be the preparer for the luchos. In order to be able to get the Torah, they needed to be educated in that God exists, and He is a divine providence, and He punishes and rewards. All of that was a foundation and a preparation for the Torah. So the matter, which represented the makos, was of the same material that the luchos were made out of. Also, the fact that the luchos were made out of this strong stone represented the fact that the luchos were the foundation, like a stone is the foundation of the world, and it's hard that if you don't keep the Torah, you get punished, which is the same thing the makos. The makos reiterated God's creation of the world, the foundation of creation, and the fact that there's reward and punishment. Same material, same idea. And therefore, where is the 10 plagues hinted to when God foretold to Avram Avinu that his children will be strangers and slaves and afflicted? And then he says, what's it called? The Gamas Hagoy, Asher Yavodu, Don Anochi. Then the nation that afflicts them, I will judge. The Achrei Chein, and afterwards, Yetzu Berchush Gadol. They'll go out with great riches. Now the word could have been Va'achar Chein, immediately after that. They'll go out with great riches. But it says Acharei. Acharei has an extra yud. That extra yud hints to the 10 plagues. After 10 plagues, not immediately. I will judge that nation and see what they need to give them the ability to do tshuva and to be punished for what they did in the past. Two purposes of the 10 plagues. And the Jews will leave after those 10 plagues with great riches, meaning a tremendous wealth of knowledge and chizuk that they got from the 10 plagues. So the Yod is right there between judging and punishing the Egyptians, which is two functions of the plagues, and right before the Rechush Gadol, the great wealth that the Jews will gain from Egypt, which was mostly the Torah, but the preparation for that, the knowledge that came from the plagues, is also there. So the 10 plagues are a purpose of punishment, of inducement for the Egyptians, and knowledge for the Jews, right? Teaching for the Jews, and therefore the matah had all three functions. It's a matah to hit, it's a matah to support the Jews and the Egyptians, and it's a matah covered for Moshe Rabbeinu to represent what his mission was. And it had all of these hints in it, the material that was made of, what was on it, all represented one of these three functions. And, yes.
Well, how come Yisroel had the matter?
How come Yisroel? Yeah, what happened was, Yosef had it last. When Yosef died, so the Egyptians, what's it called, took his household, took a lot of the things that he amassed, you know, as part of his malchus. One of them was that staff. Paro took it. And Yisro, who was an advisor to Paro, somehow got that staff through Paro. So Yisro had it, and it says that he had it in his garden. Nobody could pick it up. And when Moshe came, he took it. And he realized he's going to be the Redeemer, that it went back to its rightful owners. And that's at that point Moshe had it. Moshe, when he died, it was put into the Mishkan, and then it went into the hands of all the kings, David HaMelech to Mashiach. We'll have that that matter.
How did David HaMelech use it?
Started the same way. Again, it was a sign of covet that your God's representative, you're holding God's staff that was made special. It was a support. He used it to teach, right, through the various things that happened hashgacha-wise in his, and he used it to punish those people who needed to be punished.
Well,
it didn't actually hit them, but it was a symbol of that. Those are the functions of a king.
Uh-huh.